Mr. Brooks, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Brooks. So I wonder, isn't one of the major benefits of this that if you come up with a scheme that appears to be fraudulent, you can attack that much quicker, and you can get publicity out so that consumers are more, you know, they have that closer tie to the time when it was advertised to the time when it's then discredited publicly, and then has a much more enhancing effect to encourage people not to invest in these kinds of ridiculous schemes.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Kimmerer, I would thank you for stating my position.
Can I follow up that question?
Are you done?
Yeah.
Senator Frye.
Is there anything to keep you from doing that right now?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Senator Frye, we believe that the only way that the securities, or excuse me, the corporation division can attack this problem currently is to proceed under securities laws, and we have difficulties in so doing.
Well, but Senator Kenemer's question had to do with speaking out, educating the public, warning the folks out there about this kind of stuff, and it seems to me that you could do that right now without any law, couldn't you? I mean, can't you send out press releases and put notices in the paper and hand out brochures and so forth that educate the public about these schemes here right now?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Frye, we certainly can, and I think that the Commissioner Edwards, to the extent that she has assets available, is indeed doing that.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Any more questions, Mr. Brooks?
Through the chair and committee to the witness, I was out for part of your testimony, but I was wondering, is there a dollar figure on what this is going to cost for implementation if this measure is in fact passed?
Yes, sir. I believe the dollar figure would be zero.
Thank you. Any further questions? Mr. Brooks, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There were those amendments that we would like to propose. I don't know where the chairman is going to go from here and what the appropriate procedure would be for the division with respect to the amendment.
Do you have the amendment?
They are not prepared. We didn't hear from the CFTC until yesterday, and we weren't able to get them put together.
All right. Mr. Brooks, feel free to contact Mr. Parker, our staff, about those amendments, and what we'll do is review the bill with the amendments and get the committee's pleasures to what we intend to do with the bill. But we'd like to please work with Mr. Parker in presenting those amendments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome, Mr. Brooks.
Mr. Chair, while we're still on this,
yes,
I'd like
Simmons.
You and Senator Frye are two resident no-charge attorneys to look at Section 18 on page 5. And see if what you think of that paragraph.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, Senator Frye, that was the provision I was trying to recollect to call to your attention. Thank you, Senator Simmons.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Frye.
I would have some qualms about the constitutionality of that, but what about providing the committee with a copy of the Washington statute they say was just
We can easily do that, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, we'd be happy. Yes, we'd really appreciate that, Brooks.
I don't know, Mr. Chair. I really would not, in response to Senator Simmons' question here, I'd be hesitant to make any definitive statement, but it certainly raises a question in my mind that I want to look into.
Well, the two things that strike me, one, the court shall have jurisdiction over any person, including a non-resident, who engages or is about to engage in any act or practice considering a violation. That involves sort of a prescience over what this person is thinking that he's about to engage in an illegal act.
Yes, Mr. Brooks, also, if you could get some information as to how well this law has worked in other states, what kind of activity they've had under it in the state of Washington and other states that have passed the legislation, that would be very helpful. We're obviously concerned about As Senator Simmons mentioned, the intention of the bill is good, but we really want it to be able to do something and really perhaps not just pass legislation just for the sake of it. And I just really emphasize exactly how you feel that the legislation will work in stopping this problem.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Brooks. The next bill will be Senate Bill 146, and our witness will be Mr. Tom Higashi. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir. I'm Tom Higashi, supervisor of the Savings and Loan Credit Union and Consumer Finance Section of the Financial Institutions Division. I appear in support of Senate Bill 146 and certain amendments we propose to the legislation. We have tendered to the committee a copy of this presentation, the proposed amendments to Senate Bill 146, and a section-by-section explanation. In summary of 146, we intend to round out and create similar enforcement options for the supervisor in the three program areas administered by my section, and that is savings and loan, credit union, and consumer finance. The end result of this rounding out would give us the following powers in each area, and that is the power to go to court for enforcement, administrative powers to issue cease and desist orders, administrative powers to impose civil penalties, and powers to proceed individually against persons as well as the institutions involved. I believe that the range of regulatory options will allow us to make a more appropriate and timely enforcement response to a program area, to a regulatory problem in any program area. Now, the amendments that we have proposed, one, adds the element of knowledge to the proposed prohibition of making false reports with our office in the three program areas. We think this is appropriate, and we don't intend to take action when a communication is a result of a mistake. And the second part of the amendments takes out references to safety and soundness when referring to the consumer finance law. These amendments recognize that the context of ORS Chapter 725 dealing with consumer finance licensees is compliance with consumer laws and rules. We have attached the section summary. It's self-explanatory. I'll submit myself to questions if there are any.
Thank you, Mr. Gashi. Any questions? Senator Simmons.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Gashi, has there been a spate of problems arising out of the existing law that these are to replace?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Simmons, yes. For example, in my consumer finance law, there's a section that says it is unlawful to fail to return paid papers or enter judgments, satisfactions of judgments, and that sort of things. Now, the only enforcement tool I have is to take away the license of a company. And I don't think that's appropriate when, you know, you may have missed one judgment or fail to return one paper. If they're doing it consistently, fine. It would be appropriate to take away their license, perhaps. But for a small number of omissions, I think it would be more appropriate to levy a fine or enter cease and desist orders, which do not have the effect of prohibiting any activities in this state. It would merely prohibit the unlawful activities. Secondly, there are certain restrictions on going after persons in the consumer finance law, and I think the Credit Union Act, we can only name institutions, and there are times when the violations are by persons rather than the company, and it is more appropriate to name the to proceed against a person. Now, we do have powers to remove individuals, but many times by the time we get to that point, that person is already removed, is fired for refusing to obey the requirements of the board of directors and the guidelines and that sort of things. But one thing we see is the same person resurfaces and goes to work for a similar institution or a institution of a different type, a bank or SNL or credit union and the like. And what I want to do is create a regulatory option where I can do a cease and desist order against an individual and, in the appropriate case, disclose the existence of that type of administrative order against that person in order to at least provide some information to the new company that's considering hiring that person. We've had instances where people who are on, we had one instance where we got a call saying, hey, this guy that used to work for me, the one I prosecuted for stealing from me, is working for a bank subsidiary. So we checked that person out, and sure enough, not only was he working there, he was on probation from a second similar offense where he had stolen from the employer and was under probation at that point. The new employer and the bonding company that checked him out was not aware of the existence of those things. I don't know if it will necessarily solve that problem, but we're seeing many instances where our institutions are hiring individuals who seem to have great qualifications, and after they cause problems, they find out that these persons were fired from a prior employer for the same things. And because of liability concerns and the like, a lot of the employers do not want to disclose that we fired this guy because he was guilty of misconduct or whatever.
Don't your current regulations at least require that any company whose employee is convicted of a crime report that to you?
Yes.
And then what do you do with that information? Do you pass it on to the new employer?
Excuse me?
Then do you pass that information on to a new employer?
At this point, we are required to approve new CEOs and board members under legislation passed in 1975 or 85 with respect to savings and loans, but it's not necessary in credit unions or consumer finance companies. And at this point, it's not the convictions that are the real problem, because those are reasonably known, I think. But it's more the case where a person acts, you know, with gross negligence or deliberate misconduct, which does not come up to the level of a crime, but it is such activities that would have the consequence of financially hurting an institution because of unsafe conduct and that sort of things.
Well, how are your fees based for an examination of a licensee?
In the consumer finance area, the examination is a $60 an hour charge. In the credit union area, we charge a flat assessment to the company. In the savings and loan area, it's an assessment also based upon total assets.
Perhaps the latter two should be changed to the hourly fee, and if you find a company that is has a series of violations of the paid papers, for example, that you mentioned, if the examiner takes enough time to go over every account, that's going to be a pretty expensive undertaking for the licensee.
We certainly could do that. It's doing something indirectly, though. Well, I'd like to paste a cease and desist order, and then If that is there's further violations, then we can take a progressively tougher.
Well, I think you have adequate ways now of enforcing your regulation and the law simply by making it more costly, at least in the case of the consumer finance licensee, more costly for them to violate. And
In the consumer, the only area we charge is in consumer finance and credit union and savings loans. We do not charge for examinations, and we have a hearing going on in Ways and Means right now. We get enough problems with keeping the staff that we have.
What's the theory behind not charging those two types of organizations for the?
We charge a flat assessment.
Well, is that
based upon
less equitable than doing it on an hourly basis?
We can debate that. I don't know. My preference is to go with a flat charge. This way there's less resistance by the institution on how long our people stay there.
Well, I think that's the point that I'm trying to make, that if the examiner was staying there, if he finds the violations, he's going to stay there longer, and that makes it more costly, and that's a better incentive to the institution to keep their things in order than it would be if they're paying a flat fee for whatever the examination is.
Yeah. Well,
I guess I have an aversion to the agency having the authority to levy civil penalties without a due process.
But certainly, Senator, these are all subject to the Administrative Procedures Act. There's ample opportunity for notice, service of charges, hearings, legislative review or judicial review.
That's a very costly procedure, both for the licensee and for the state.
I don't quarrel with that, but I believe it's a lot fairer way than to, send my persons over there for a month and punish them without chance for hearing or review of the charges.
I think it'd be a much more effective way to get things
I only have two consumer finance examiners, and I have 170 licensees that we have to examine annually. We're asking to be allowed to examine by once every 2 years. In the case of savings alone, I have one examiner that works 6 hours a day, and that's all. In the case of credit unions, I only have two examiners, and by the time the Ways and Means gets through with us, I may be down to half of what I have right now. If you want a complete program, I can't do it.
Well, I think if Ways and Means felt you were collecting $60 an hour for your examination or 75 or whatever, they let you hire more examiners who would pay for themselves.
Well, it's a more profound problem, sir. In the case of savings and loans, we lost Willamette savings and loan to conversion to federal charter, and that means over half my budget is shot.
I see. Well, that's
so, working any extra hours ain't going to make up the difference.
I'm suggesting that maybe if the work were done on an hourly basis, then your cost and your income would both be predicated on the need for the examiner's services. I think we sort of have the cart before the horse. We're making an examination under a dollar constraint without regard to the amount of effort that's required to keep the licensee in accordance with the regulations.
Yeah. Senator, I'm merely proceeding the way I find the law. And it doesn't.
But you're asking us to change the law.
Well, as to giving us the additional options for regulatory response to the violations.
Well, Mr. Chair, I come from a background of a good many years of being a licensee of the department, and knowing what licensees are inclined to do with respect to obeying or violating the regulations and the law. And my experience in my own business and in my competitors was that when we saw the examiner come in the door, we hastened to get him out because of the charge. Most cases, examiners are very personable, and we like to visit with them. But one of the rules of the office is you don't visit with the examiner. He's here to do his work and not to charge us anymore. And when he did find a violation, his practice was to look for additional violations of the same kind, which again is an incentive to keep violations at a minimum. I get back to this civil penalty thing, which is another way of doing the same thing, but it raising the penalty from $1,000 to $2,500 is giving a lot of leeway to an agency, and even though it might be subject to appeal through hearings and administrative procedures and court actions and so forth, that again is an expense that falls on both the state and the licensee, and it doesn't seem to me to be accomplishing as much.
May I say one more thing about
sure.
that, sir? One of the problems we're already facing, especially in the consumer finance industry area, is the accusation that we have to find work for our examiners in order to pay for them. And if we had to put on an additional body just so we could do the additional punishing of those who are violating, then in order to meet my budgetary requirements, the accusation will be accelerated that we are looking for areas where we can charge just so we can justify the person.
Well, that's
now, if in fact we could get general fund funding or something where I didn't have to worry about paying for the extra examiner, it would be one thing. But in this instance, we are supported by fees.
Well, a $2,500 fine, though, where does that money go? Does that go into your operating expense?
Or? The reason we use the $2,500 is we were standardizing it with all of the penalties within the agency. I think the last time around, the legislature set that amount in the savings and loan statute, so we just followed that all the way through.
Rather than reduce the
as far as I'm concerned, you can reduce the amount.
I mean, you standardize up instead of down.
Yeah. Well, the amount I don't worry about that much. It's the ability to respond appropriately that I'm proposing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome, Senator Simmons. Any further questions? Senator Fry.
Well, Senator Simmons asked a question I don't think was answered, and that's where the money goes if you collect any from these penalties.
It goes into the
state treasury.
Yes.
So I guess he asked the question, and I would ask the same question as to how's that going to help you then? Increase the amount of the penalty, and it goes into the state treasury.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fry, the money doesn't help me.
Mm-hmm.
I acknowledge that, but just the fact that I could levy that could gives me a additional regulatory tool that I can use.
How many $1,000 penalties have you levied since the legislature met 3 years ago?
I did one for $1,500.
One for who, please?
For $1,500.
One for $1,500.
Yes, and I've proposed two others. But basically in those areas, it was paid in lieu of my proceeding to remove their license because they had no appropriate remedy in between. They had continued to run shoddy operation, and I propose a fine as a in-between remedy, and that's where I got the idea of coming to the legislature to try to make sure that I had the lawful authority to do this. And basically, in that first case, everybody agreed that if they paid that penalty, they wouldn't challenge it. If I set the penalty, they wouldn't challenge it, then I wouldn't say anymore.
That just been the one penalty in the past couple of years?
I've only been there since 1985.
Yeah, so that's the only penalty since you've been there.
Then. Yes. Yeah. Well, I've got two pending.
Okay. Now, on page 5, I notice in sections 15 that the authority there is under the present language, either you or an examiner or employee of the financial institutions division has access to books and has authority to make an examination under oath and so forth, and you're changing this. You're suggesting it be changed to leave that, give just you the authority instead of one of your employees, the way I read it. And if that's the case, then your problem with lack of help seems to be enhanced.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Frye, I'm not...
I'm looking on page 5 of the printed bill, section 15. Two or three places in there.
Yes, I think what happened here, the language was straightened out by the legislative drafter. We hired Lewis Littlehales over at Commerce. He went through all our laws and tried to straighten it out. I don't think there is an intent to change the legal effect there.
Okay.
Because I can act through an agent or examiners and
any further questions, Mr. Ghashi? Senator Simmons.
Mr. Chair, I was looking for the section that does give you the authority to act through an agent. Question on this same subject in a Government Operations Elections Committee about the Secretary of State issuing a subpoena or through a specially designated employee was given that power, and I suppose it's a whole question of agency, but wouldn't that have to be specifically authorized?
I would think that it should, and
certainly
perhaps if we can't find it now, Senator Simmons and the committee would appreciate receiving an answer to that.
Which law are we talking about, sir?
Well, we're looking here at Section 15, which is ORS 725, where you have deleted the authority of the either personally or by an examiner or other employee. May do so and so. That's
725.310. Section 15 on page 5 of the printed bill.
I guess I'm lost.
All right.
I had, if you want to look at and get that back to us later, I think that would be fine.
That would be.
But okay. In view of Mr. Long's testimony the other day, can you tell me how much the administrator of the Financial Institutions Division has to do with the procedures here?
The administrator has the power to review all the penalties that I levy.
That's
has the power to... as of December 15, and savings and loans at end of July 31 of each year. We'd like the ability to by rule, change the payment dates and to straighten out our cash flow, and also to handle other problems, such as in the credit union area. January 15 is too close because we use the average assets for the last three quarters, which would be the period ending December 31 of each year. And in 15 days, a lot of the institutions have not completed their accounting for the year and still have adjustments and things to make. And we hit the bubble at that point because if their end-of-year accounts are not settled, then it's difficult to determine what the correct fees should be. And so we need the flexibility to change the dates to a more reasonable date for that purpose. And that's basically my testimony.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Higashi. Any questions concerning Senate Bill 147? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next witness will be Mr. Frank Bronner.
Mr. Chairperson, members of the committee, I'm Frank Bronner with the Oregon Bankers Association and the State Chartered Banks of Oregon. We support Senate Bill 147. We believe that the department, the Financial Institutions Division, needs to have annual assessments rather than examination-based assessments. Thanks to this committee and last session and the interim work that Senator Frey engaged in, banking was moved to an April 15th assessment time, and by rule, the supervisor establishes the level of fees. Somehow, Senator Frey, my fault, we forgot to handle trust companies. They're still on an examination-based assessment, which means that when the department runs short of cash, they run out and are required to examine a healthy institution, whether it needs it or not, in order to get their fees. So I think it's a move ahead, and we support having all of the institutions regulated by the Financial Institutions Division on an annual assessment rather than an examination-based assessment. However, we do not subscribe to the supervisor by rule establishing the date. We think the date ought to be statutory provided for, and we would propose to amend it to that extent. We think that date ought to be universal and be April 15th. The department has a cash flow difficulty. I think that would address a small part of the problem. But what I don't think that, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I don't think what we want is a case where we can be whipsawed, where the credit unions are in January and the savings and loans are another date and the banks another date. We're now working in a combined department atmosphere, and we ought to look at the entire budget and ensure that the legislative intent, which was to see that banking paid for banking, credit unions paid for credit unions, and so forth, that intent is carried out. And the only way we can do that is, in our opinion, having one specific date in the statute, still establishing by rule the level of fees for the various entities, and that rule process would have a hearing where all parties could be heard. But to allow the supervisor to establish a different date, as this bill could provide for each of the entities, we object to, and we think that it is a statutory date that should be set, and we would suggest April 15th. I did not have time to prepare the appropriate amendments. I would be happy to bring them to you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Bronner. Any questions for Mr. Bronner?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Frey.
I'm sorry to see if I follow this now. Why wouldn't, if we took up your suggestion now, why wouldn't we just leave the original language in and just change the three sections to have uniformity in the date? Is that what you're really saying?
That's what I'm really saying, Senator Frey.
So, for example, Mr. Chair, if you look at line 8 on page 2, it would just simply say fees under this subsection shall be assessed and paid not later than April 15th of each year. That would be a return of the old language and just a change in the date. That would appear also in two other places on that page. I think that's what you're saying.
In the case of, I think, trust companies, sir, and consumer finance companies, and Tom can correct me on this, I've discussed it with Fred Morgan also, there is a need to change to get away from the fee being paid at the exit of an examination. We've got that, I think, in 706-540, so there's an additional change that needs to be made. In other words, if you look at line 24 on page 1, that's trust companies that we're talking about there. It says, fees under this section shall be collected at the time of each regular examination. And what we propose, Senator Fry, is the same language that you see on line 16 that has been deleted. Fees under this section shall be assessed and paid not later than April 15th of each year. But we propose that that would be consistent throughout the various chapters.
Senator Kenemer.
Mr. Chairman, and Frank, I wonder, would there be an administrative benefit for the division to be able to look at these on a staggered basis rather than having them just all due on April 15th, which I don't know how big a time that is in banks, but for some of the rest of us, it's a significant day.
Maybe we should change it to April 1st.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kenemer, we're not wedded to the April 15th date, except that has worked 1 year. We've been 1 year in this business ourselves, but it is after the time that the December 31st call reports have been assembled and have been provided and audited by the department, and a 30-day billing of the fee. You also have an administrative rules process to set the fees. You see, Ways and Means is now dealing with the Financial Institutions Division budget. That budget talks about expenditures and talks about revenue. You've got the bill that talks about revenue. Our experience, our 1 year's vast experience, tells me that it is totally unfair to have the credit union piece done, over with, and billed before the rest of the pieces have gone through the rule process. What we found out last year, that credit unions had their fees reduced. Our fees increased. It was too late to back up and say, wait a minute, that isn't fair. I understand the administrative process by having each one dealt separately, but we're talking about a Financial Institutions Division budget that comes before Ways and Means that is in serious difficulty. And here we are in serious difficulty in that budget, and last year we reduced the fees for credit unions. I'm saying that the total, I don't think that we'd get there if we don't have the administrative process go forward on behalf of the division rather than each individual piece.
Any further questions of Mr. Bronner?
Thank you for your patience.
You're welcome, Mr. Bronner. Shigashi, do you have any response at all to that? Anything that you'd like to?
Mr. Chairman, this comes as a surprise to me. I'm not prepared to speak for the side.
That's fine. I just
from
thought
my side.
Yes.
I have no operational problems with respect to the dates.
Yes. Well,
to having a set date as far as credit unions, consumer finance, and savings and loan, and certainly if there's any fears on Mr. Brunner's part that we try to load it on the banks, I have no problem with having the same days.
All right. Well,
when we assess the bank.
Yes, Mr. Gashi, I don't want to put you on the spot. You've just heard about these. I would appreciate it if you would discuss this with Mr. Bronner and just let us know what your position is.
Yeah. As for my section, I have no problem.
All right. Well, perhaps
I have discussed it with Supervisor Banking Fred Morgan, and he was aware of my concern. I assume Tom that he had discussed it with you.
No.
All right. Well, excuse me. Yes.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
No. Frank Bronner with the Oregon Bankers Association. I have discussed the matter with Fred Morgan, the supervisor of banking, and I'm sure that we can come back to the committee with amendments.
Any further questions? Gentlemen, thank you both very much. And is there any further business before we adjourn?
No, you don't want to take any motions.
We are adjourned.